We have Millie Palmer on the line joining us for this hour, 312-981-7200, with any questions you might have for her about estate planning. Please don't wait till the end of the hour. That always happens. And then people call in right as we have to say bye to Millie. So get those calls and questions in right now. Millie Palmer, how are you doing today?
John, I'm doing great. It's a beautiful day out.
We'll take it after all this heat.
Yeah,
absolutely. I think it's a day where a lot of people, in fact, as I'm looking at the calendar, 23 years ago today, I got dropped off at the University of Illinois, Urbana-Champaign.
I know.
That's a number that even shocks me. But I think a lot of people out there remember the day they were dropped off at college, or maybe some parents just are making the road trip down right now, or just about to, or just came back. And not to scare or startle anyone, Millie, but I do want to talk about this because I think it's important. The thing on the checklist that I think a lot of parents don't add to the prepare for your kids' college is something that they really should. What is missing off a lot of checklists?
Missing is powers of attorney, John. Parents think, well, I can help my child out. They're still my kid. I'm paying for them. And of course I can do things for them. But, you know, every year we hear about a kid who's got a problem, and because of their health situation or whatever's going on, the parents' hands are tied. And, you know, God forbid something happens to your kid. They're in a hospital, unconscious, et cetera, and you don't have the authority to make decisions for them. We're beating the drum trying to get parents to get their kids to sign powers of attorney for health care, property, living wills, and HIPAA authorizations.
I know that's something people don't even want to consider, which is probably why it's left off the checklist. But I would imagine that it's a relatively inexpensive thing to get done for the peace of mind and knowing that most likely you're not going to use it. And God willing, you're not going to use it. But if a situation comes up, you've already got that settled up and ready to go.
I mean, considering what you would pay if you had to go through guardianship court, which is your other option, it's a drop in the bucket, John. And at our office, we go one further. When the kid's done signing their powers of attorney and we've gone through documents, explained it, decided choices, all of that, we'll talk to them, give them a little pep talk about legal things, like what to do if you're pulled over by a cop. What happens if you get in trouble at school? You know, when should you bring parents or an attorney in? And the answer is as soon as possible.
Interesting. And that's not to be like supersede or try and get around what law enforcement is trying to do. It's just kind of knowing your rights. And if someone doesn't explain it, perhaps to an 18-year-old, they may, they just may talk as much as they can and it may not work out so great for them.
Well, that's right. So if you're pulled over by a police officer and the cop asks you the question, have you been drinking tonight? That is a signal that you're about to be arrested for DUI.
Right.
So why would you give any evidence? I mean, don't drink and drive.
Right. I think that's...
Hire the Uber.
Yes.
I mean,
Goes
and
without
don't
saying.
Be an underage drinker.
Right.
And there is no legal limit if you're under 21.
Yes.
Any amount of alcohol, any amount of pot is a DUI. But if we talk about those types of things, we talk about things like, do you have an expectation of privacy in your dorm room? Probably not. You've probably signed that away. Do you have, so they can come check and see where you're hiding your booze, right? And by the way, everyone knows it goes in the ceiling tile. Just don't put it there.
If you're over 21, of course, is what we're saying.
If you're over 21, put it in your fridge.
Yes.
Where it belongs.
If you're
under 21, don't buy it.
Exactly, Millie Palmer. Exactly. From navigantlaw.com is where you can go for more of this. But, Millie, so just to recap, it's a health power of attorney for something, God forbid. And these can be things that ultimately get the kid ends up fine, but for a night or there's moments where they're unconscious where there can be something complicated happening, or it could be worse than that. But,
and, John, it doesn't even have to be that dramatic. My kids, three out of my four kids were college athletes. We needed shot records. They didn't get them from the physician's office, their pediatrician's office. So I carefully explained that I couldn't get them from the pediatrician, blah, blah, blah. They had to call. Well, guess what? They weren't good at making phone calls
right.
and picking things up. They didn't have that skill set. Luckily, I had made them sign powers of attorney for healthcare. And so when the doctor said, gee, Millie, your son is over age 18, I can't give that information to you, I said, agent under power of attorney, can I fax that over?
And yeah, and of course you could. It goes,
of course I could.
Besides health, you mentioned a couple other things. Are any of those give you the power to be able to see how your kid is doing in school? You know, I know a lot of people say, well, I'm paying for school. I should be able to see all the grades. They don't go to you.
Well, you know, they don't go to you. So we will put in FERPTA powers, which means authority to communicate with the university. But honestly, the best way to see how your child is doing is to log into their account using their login and password, because that's a school thing on whether or not they'll set it up to give access. So, you know, that's sort of one of those questions on what are you and a parent and what the child, the student, doing with an expectation of what's happening,
yeah.
right? And, you know, there were times I you know, was super proud of my grades and would have shown them to anyone. And there were other classes where I struggled a little more, John.
Yeah.
My Calculus 3 teacher was kind to me in my grade.
I think I know what you're saying there. Yes, that's a debate. So suffice to say, there's really not a way to ensure or mandate, unless you've already, like the university policy allows, for a sharing of grades between students and parents, even though parents are very likely paying for the college education.
Very likely. And, you know, that it gets into, you're getting into some interesting waters, which is, what if the parents are divorced? Right. Mm-hmm. And so if the parents are divorced and heaven forbid something happens with the kid, who's going to make those decisions? Right. Is it mom? Is it dad? We're not going to have a joint agent under power of attorney. So who's going to do healthcare things? Who's going to do financial or day to day business, a living type things? Who's going to be the contact point with the university? Some of these things we put in the power of attorney, some of these things are just leak discussions of adulthood that the child should be having with each of their parents.
Yeah.
Right?
May not feel like they're adults, but they are, so.
They are. They are. The day they turned 18, they woke up and a magic light was glowing down. And a mantle of adulthood just settled upon them.
I'll tell you what, 23 years ago when I was dropped off at the U of I, I was less than a month into my quote-unquote adulthood, and I think it took me maybe 7 years before I actually would consider myself having moved there, maybe even a little later than that. Millie, you had a question about the power of attorney from Deb. Hi, Deb. You're on WGN.
Hi. My question is, my daughter is 40. She's single. She's a good job. She has her own condo. And she's my power of attorney, but I don't have her. She doesn't have a power of attorney, and I guess
yeah.
I'm an adult, so
oh, gosh.
Should I have her?
Go ahead, Deb.
What could go wrong if we didn't have it? No, what could go wrong if we didn't have it set up?
Right, so you're basically asking, hold on, let me just make sure I reset for everyone. You are her power of attorney, but since she's single, you're wondering who could make a decision if there needs to be.
No, she's my power of attorney.
Right,
she
sorry.
She can make decisions for me.
Yes. Yeah. Now we're saying, should we reverse it? Millie, what could go wrong for a 40-year-old who's single and there is no power of attorney?
Well, you know, I'm not sure what sort of what her health is like, and I hope it's robust and that she's a safe driver and you never get into a medical pickle. But if somebody is in a hospital on in trouble where they cannot speak for themselves, they cannot offer an opinion about what course of action to take, then we have to ask the next question, who is authorized to speak for them? So there are there is a Healthcare Surrogate Act, which says, has a listing of names, but it's a limited action that you can take under that act. In other words, if you want authority to speak for them and you want to be able to do what all the options out there, then we should be using a healthcare power of attorney.
The one that you mentioned just beforehand that is like power of attorney light, I'll call it. Is that done through like a website on through state by state? Through the like, how does someone at least name someone somewhere as something?
Yeah. So Illinois has made a series of decisions for us if we cannot make those decisions for ourselves. So, for example, if I were sick and in the hospital and I have a husband and four kids, my husband, as my spouse, has authority to speak for me.
Okay.
If it's not my husband, then my four kids, in joyful connectivity, are going to, in group action, figure out what to do with mom, right? Well, those same four kids, who, by the way, get along great, cannot agree on how to order pizza. We can't have pizza as a family. We haven't been able to for decades. It's been a problem.
So that's a situation where you want something a little more defined. But what about someone that? What if someone is single and doesn't have kids? Can it go up to can it go up to Deb? Is that like the next order, or is this a messier situation?
Yes, but I mean, I feel like I'm leading you astray, telling you can rely on that Healthcare Surrogate Act. It's not a good option. It's going to limit you to making decisions based on what the hospital is going to want you to do.
Hmm.
In other words, if you don't like their course of action or course of treatment, you can't say, I reject your reality and substitute my own. We're going over here.
Ah.
So you get a little stuck with that Healthcare Surrogate Act.
Okay, Deb, so it seems like...
Oh, for health, even for finances.
Yeah.
What about finances? Yeah. Even work.
I don't even know who her mortgage is with, you know?
Yeah. No, that's a great point that brings up, Millie. What about the financial side of things?
Well, the financial side of things, power of attorney for finance, property, that kind of thing, that even is day-to-day business living. It's big things. Who's going to be able to pay my mortgage? How do I pay that bill? Where does the money come from? It's little things. Who could take my dog to have his toenails clipped?
Right.
I mean, there's lots and lots of things in that business of living that the power of attorney for property solves for us. And again, if somebody is a disabled dependent adult or an incapacitated adult, our options are rely on the powers of attorney or go to guardianship court.
It gets messy. And
it's messy. And quite frankly, we don't even have to be disabled for either of those documents to come to play. Power of attorney for healthcare. I could get my kids' shot records. I could make the appointment at the doctor. I could ask for the file to be transferred to A to B. My kid can be alive and robust, and we're seeking different options on a thing.
Yeah. Millie, let's pause that thought here. And Deb, thank you for the phone call. That was a lot. Call your daughter. Tell her to give Millie a call, and maybe you guys line this up.
I've talked to her about this in the past, and we just kind of like, not against it. It's just kind of like, we'll do that sometime.
Yeah,
I'll talk to her again.
Yeah, that's 99% of us, Deb. Do not feel bad about that. We all do that. The number for Millie Palmer is 847-253-8800, 847-253-8800. We'll get more of this, including the quirky Illinois estate threshold and that little quirky part of the law after this break, and then the news on WGN. 312-981-7200 is our phone number if you have a question for Millie Palmer of Navigant Law. She covers estate planning, powers of attorney, all that sort of stuff. Maybe you're thinking about your own plan and how to put it together, or maybe you've inherited a plan that someone else put together, or the government's plan, and you're having some issues with all those things. Our phone number, 312-981-7200. Millie, you wanted to talk about something else that I had no idea how complex was, and that is Illinois' estate tax. Can you just explain currently? Yeah, well, I knew that the threshold in Illinois was $4 million for an estate, meaning that if you have an estate that is valued under $4 million, and a reminder of an estate, Millie, is everything you have, right, basically?
Everything. Everything. Even your life insurance. And people are often surprised by that. They say, but when I bought the life insurance, I was told it wasn't taxable. And the answer is, it's not subject to income tax. It's part of your estate for purposes of the estate tax.
What about 401ks?
401ks are included. So everything.
See, $4 million sounds like... Oh, go ahead.
It depends on what jurisdiction you're in, on whether or not they're going to include your 401k. So I'm gonna back off on
that
one.
Okay, that's fine.
But you're looking at all of your assets as part, and then you start looking for exceptions, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the exception might be based on the type of asset. I only have a life estate, so it turns off when I die. So my pension, right, if I had one. or it might be, there might be an exception to the estate tax based on who's the beneficiary. Well, I'm giving everything to my spouse. Okay. Or to a charity. Okay. But you know, we're looking at more people than you'd imagine being subject to the estate tax. Our houses are going up in value. My husband and I, we have four kids. We have lots of life insurance. We're worried about whether or not at second to die, because at first to die, if everything goes to my spouse, no problem. But at second to die, if it's all over on his side, outright to him, it's all on his side, I got an issue. Well, I don't. I'm dead. But my kids have an issue, and it might be hundreds of thousands of dollars, John.
Well, that's the thing. I think that we get to $4 million. Look, if you've got $4 million in assets, great. You've done great things in your life. But I'm saying it doesn't mean you're super wealthy necessarily because you add – and I'm going to get pushback from that. But you kind of get what I'm saying, really, right? Like an upper middle-class family that's saved up a bunch of money over the years, have the life insurance. I'm just saying maybe you got a lot of equity in your house that you bought for $200,000, now is worth $1.5 million. It starts to add up quickly.
It starts to add up quickly. And I realize it's not everyone that's going to have an issue on it. But if you add it all together and you're somewhere in the $3.5 million, and again, if you have $2 or $3 million in life insurance, you're going to get there faster than you think.
Yeah.
Right.
And so the quirky part is, and I just want to hit on this, and I want to make sure I understand this correctly. I think that I do, that if you have an estate worth $3,999,999, you pay zero in Illinois estate tax, and same with federal,
right,
which is a much higher threshold. But if you have $4 million, it's not every dollar above that. They actually then say, ding, ding, you get taxed.
You're going back to dollar one.
That's
and I
insane.
Think if you exceed $4 million.
Okay.
So I think it's $4 million and 50 cents, you know.
It's not just taxed on the 50 cents. It's taxed back to dollar one.
Dollar one. And the rough estimated tax rate is somewhere around 12%. So let's say we tax $4 million at 12%, we're writing a check for $480,000.
That's crazy to me that they would do that. Like income tax is done way differently, right? Because you don't want to like restrict people from making $1 more because it dings them X amount. It's every dollar over a certain threshold. I want to like get Illinois' legislature on the phone and be like, fix this, because then all you're leading to is people trying to be squirrely or move the eggshells around to try and stay under that threshold. Because if someone has $4 million and $5 and they're only taxed on the $5, then people are way less likely to try and maneuver around that $4 million threshold. Right, Millie?
That's right. So for us, there's some ways to do it using a two-trust structure. There's looking at who your beneficiaries are. There's lifetime gifting. So if you're at $3.5 million, you're probably not going to need more than that during your lifetime. Maybe start giving the kids money now.
Yeah.
Right? Give them their $19,000 per annum. And it's per person per annum. And that's going up to $20,000 next year. I mean, there's a way to keep it under. Take the dumb river cruise trip. I really want to go on one of those. Come on.
They look great, right?
They do.
But yeah, I think you make up a great point because I think a lot of us think, oh, we'll leave our kids this big chunk when we pass. And that's wonderful, by the way, if you're able to do that. But we're living longer and longer. So when we pass, if God willing, we're at 90 or something, our kids might be 60 or something. They may need it when they're 30 or 40, and it can keep you under a threshold too. So you can do something and see the value of what you did for your kids in addition to helping them out on the taxes later.
Right. And maybe you don't have children, and maybe it's not your kids. Maybe it's your best friend, Jerry, who's always struggled, or that local soup kitchen that can do so much with those dollars, or the Wheeling Township Food Pantry, or, you know, come on, there's lots of great places to put money that are better than giving giant checks to the state of Illinois. And I like living in Illinois, and I like my services, and I like the park districts and all the things, John, but I don't necessarily want to work my lifetime and then have that money go to the state. And quite frankly, I don't want to buy life insurance just to benefit the state of Illinois.
That's a very great
point.
Maybe
get rid of some of the life insurance. I mean,
yeah, there's places that buy that. Anyways, you can walk through it with people or, you know, chat with financial people as well. But suffice to say, you know, if you're over $3 million in your estate, and remember what that means, $3.5 million, or you think you might get there by the time you get a little older, a phone call to you guys can save an estate a lot of money.
Exactly. And some clients are not ready for it yet. So what we'll do is we'll set them up with a two-trust structure for the other estate planning reasons, right? Like minor children or avoiding probate or, you know, a lot of reasons to use a structure. But we'll set up two trusts, a spouse A and a spouse B. And then if they need those tax planning provisions in the future, we can throw them in. But at least getting that conversation, having that understanding of, what should I be listening for in the news? What's out there? What should I hear about? And you know, paying attention and making a choice. That's all estate planning's about.
I imagine that $4 million has moved over time. Are some people put into a situation maybe years ago that was correct for the time when the threshold was lower that maybe doesn't apply to them now? Like they're putting in some sort of trust that made sense, you know, 23 years ago, but doesn't make as much sense today. Do you see what I'm asking?
I do. So the provisions that save on estate tax are basically putting in a sub-trust bucket. And it gets a little complicated, and it's probably more than we have time for today.
Okay.
But when the estate tax exclusion amount or exemption in Illinois was at $600,000, a lot of people got there faster, and it was creeping up. It was 625, 675, and then it went to a million, and then a million and a half, and a lot of people were at that level by the time you added everything up, and so the attorney, rightly so, said, hey, we can double. We can get an exclusion for each of you, right? We can turn that 1 million into two, and that's plenty of room for you. Well, now they're at that two. But the exclusion amount is four. We don't need those provisions. We could strip them out, because what they do is they make the trust administration a little more complicated and a little more complex. Mm-hmm. And anytime I can have fancy pieces of paper, and not pay giant checks to the government and taxes, I'm all for it.
Yes, yes.
But if I don't need that level of complexity, let's get rid of it.
I see what you're saying. So as the threshold went up, some of you folks said if you have a trust that you made a long time ago, might be worth revisiting retrospectively. Billy, we got to take a commercial break. A lot of people have some questions. 312-981-7200. Get on the line right now with those questions. So we can get them in before Millie has to leave us today. 312-981-7200. And we'll do it after this on WGN. Millie Palmer from Navigant Law. Millie, we get a lot of questions that people started chiming in with. What about this? What about this? Contact a lawyer. Call Millie. I know you and your team, when you aren't just talking on the radio, will look into everything extremely so. But I will go out there and say every place I looked, Millie, seems to say that your 401k and your IRA, Roth or traditional, and other retirement accounts are counted at fair market value on the date of death towards the $4 million exemption.
Illinois. And I believe that's the case here in Illinois, John.
Everywhere I look says it is. So
you should be. I don't do the estate the estate tax return. I typically will work with a CPA. And so, of course, we want to ask the question as of date of death. So if you die today, the answer might be A. If you die in 10 years, the answer might be B, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we want to like kick that can of what's the actual calculation. And I usually just err on the side of looking at the worst case scenario, like the most assets are counted. And then asking the next question, what's going to happen? You know, what do I want to have happen with those assets? And then what's the reality of what's going to happen with those assets?
Yeah.
But it's so bad. If you have to cash in an IRA to pay the estate tax, think about that.
It's crazy. Well, like $4 million sounds like so much, but if people's 401ks are in there, I mean, some people that have, you know, been saving 10-15% since they started working 40 years ago can get to $2-3 million pretty quickly. Good for them for doing that. And guess what? That's what you need to retire in a lot of situations. So it's not even that absurd of an amount.
It's not. I mean, trust me, it's a lot of money. It really is. I'm sensitive to that. But think about this. What if your life insurance pays to your best friend, your kid, your this, your that, and all that's rolling through the trust is investment accounts or 401ks? Or how are we going to collect that money? If you don't have a trust that collects assets, right, who's going to pay the estate tax? Your kids, but they're going to have to give back cash. Right? So you could get into some really bad pickles.
Well, yeah, they could also have to pay the income tax on some of this stuff.
Right. You got to cash some of it in.
And then you pay the income tax on it just to pay a tax. Okay.
Just to have cash to pay the estate tax. Yeppers.
Exactly. Let's go. We got a
question.
I
got to tell you this. You
please.
Earn the dollar, you get taxed. You invest the dollar and you pull it out to do something. You get taxed on the capital gain. You die. It's included in your taxable estate. I mean, just the thought of all of it.
Yeah.
There's ways around it.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say, is that, look, Uncle Sam or Uncle Lincoln for Capitolville, I don't know what we call the state, but you know what I mean. They've got plans for this money.
Sure.
That money's going to get it. They're going to get it in some way, shape, or form. And again, I'm with you, Millie. Taxes are important in a civic society where we have schools and we have parks and we have a military. And like, I'm not against paying my fair share. It's just there's a lot, and there's a little bit. And I just want to say this too, to maybe the people that are well over $4 million who have no problem hiring a lawyer. They don't worry about this stuff because they've got people, they're wealthy enough to pay for people to do this. I think what we're talking to and who we're trying to hit here today are those middle-class families that have done what they were told to do from the beginning, save money for retirement, finding out that the threshold and how much money they're going to give back is way higher than they would have thought.
Way higher. And, you know, John, even the wealthy families, they don't necessarily get out there and do the work with estate planning.
True.
It's a taboo subject for some people. They don't want to think about it. They don't want to address the issue.
Right.
But you know what? Sitting in my office is a lot more pleasant than writing a check for $500K.
Amen. So that answers Luis's question, by the way, on line one, money in an IRA and an estate tax. Yeah, even a Roth, it looks like. But talk to your lawyers and advisors to make sure. This is just what the internet's telling me right now on a quick look. Gene, let's get Gene's question in at least, and then maybe I'll beg Millie Palmer to stay around for five extra minutes. Gene, what's your question?
My question is something that would benefit many, many people. And I just this week, I've been having my shorts in a knot over the fact that I keep hearing about funding a trust.
Yes.
I never realized that a trust is simply a box and that you have to make an effort to like put the house in or whatever.
Well, it looks like we're losing Gene there a little bit. But, Millie, another great reminder to people. The trust is a box, as Gene said. You got to fund it.
Absolutely. And, you know, your attorney, when they created your trust, should have sat with you and said, hey, you've got to connect your assets to the trust. But I'll tell you, I'll have that conversation with everyone, and I always have. And then some clients will come back to revise things 5, 7, 10 years later, and I'll say, how's your funding? And they'll say, what do you mean?
Hmm.
So, you know, there's so much that happens in that decision process on creating those important documents, that you really need to sort of jump back and talk to your attorney every year, every 3 years. I mean, let's make this a relationship so we can have that long-term knowledge sort of seek in.
Absolutely. 847-253-8800, 847-253-8800. Navigant Law is where people can go, navigantlaw.com, I believe. I don't have the website up in front of me. Yep, navigantlaw.com. Millie, as always, thank you so much.
Oh, I always love coming and talk to you, John.
We'll talk again soon. Thank you. That's Millie Palmer, Navigant Law.